accession number 23089, Reel 7.
Margaret Cornish Ridout.
Ridout.
Why don't I get that right? And this is Reel 7. You know, talking of the war, did you ever experience V1s and V2s when you were back in London? You know, did that
when happen? I was in London, I did, yes. Especially those V2s were terrifying.
Yes,
they used to just explode without any warning. At least with the V1s, you heard them coming, and you just prayed they'd keep going a little longer. And the one that fell outside my flat in Cheyne Walk, of course, didn't go any further. And it landed in the mud of the river, which softened the blow slightly, but the blast was pretty horrendous. It certainly shattered all the glass, it was just rubble. And my flat was up three lots of steps. And the whole of the stairway was littered with glass and rubble, and I think I may have well had it, only the door of my bedroom, I was in bed, and the door of the bedroom, fell across my bed and saved a lot of the rubbish falling on me. But I'd gone to bed in trousers and boots. So obviously we were pretty, and we had all the AKAK guns in Battersea Park, of course, just across the river, which were quite horrific. And I slept on somebody's floor that night. I went and crawled out, down through this rubble, into the road, and of course people milling around. And I remember being taken, I think I was in shock. That was when I was still teaching. And slept on the floor of somebody's flat. I never knew who or where or what, and that's how it was. But I didn't have a great deal of experience, really and truly, of London, because, of course, out on the boats, as I say, past Watford, we were in the countryside, and not really aware of what was going on.
Do you know if other boats were hit or suffered it? Do you know if other boats were damaged at all by the war?
Not that I know. I only know of the one pair. And they weren't properly, really damaged. They were just suffered shocks and a bit of a mess, wanted sort of servicing a bit. And it was Kit's boats, and she had two trainees on board, and they were all a bit shocked and were given time off. But none of us know. Of course, there were very few pairs of boats operating at the time, you know, very few indeed, even with the boat people themselves. There were very few boat people operating. And there were only about how many pairs of us at any one time? Did Sonia give any idea as to how many boats at any one time? I would have said there were never more than 6 to 8 pairs of women's boats.
At any one time?
At any one time. Even at the peak when all of us... I can only think of 6. I'm sure there weren't more.
You mentioned very briefly earlier V-Day, the end of the war.
Yes.
Did you celebrate at all? Was there a celebration?
Yes, I wanted to go to London and dance, I remember. And, of course, I was with Susan Wolfert at the time, whose husband was quite a well-known Shakespearean actor. And she, too, had been on the stage at Stratford. So, actually, the three of us, it was Susan Blood and Susan Wolford and myself, we all went down to Stratford, and Susan knew people. We went to the theatre and saw As You Like It, I remember. It's written in my diary anyway, so it must have done. And we had bed and breakfast for 6 and 6 pence. With bacon and eggs, which was wonderful. And then we came back, and the boat people had tied up at Hawkesbury Stop, which is quite a centre for the boat people. That's near Coventry, Hawkesbury Stop. And several pairs, two or three pairs of boats, the Humphreys, I remember, were there with their children. and they were tied up, and they had a bonfire going, and the children were absolutely thrilled to bits, because of course they had never seen lights. They'd been born in the blackout and had only known blackout, and we had all the lights from the cabins, and I think there was a bonfire, and there was a Mr. Finches were there, and the Humphreys. And Humphreys, yes, that's right. Hilda Humphreys had hurt her leg in an accident. And Susan Blood was busy looking after her, nursing her. And there was a baby, I remember. And we were all given ginger wine. I still drink ginger wine. all given ginger wine in a glass. It was drunk by us all. It was circulated. We all drank from the same glass of ginger wine to celebrate VE Day. That was at Hawkesbury Stop. Near Coventry. And that was a great celebration. I thought that was one of the best celebration of all. And we sang all the songs like Pack Up Your Troubles and, gosh, what were the songs? I've forgotten. White Cliffs of Dover and all the songs that were Roll Out the Barrel. I tried to remember them. And we all sang. Everybody was singing and cheering, you know. Must have been a few boat people around. It was the Humphreys, and they were a family. They had quite a few children. And Finches, I think he was elderly, very elderly, Mr. Finch. It's always Mr., you know. Yes, we always called him Mr. It was never Bert or Alec or anything like that. It's all very formal. And the Smiths were there, I think. Because I can remember, what was her name? Oh dear, names have gone from me. Anyway, she came over and said hello. I think that was George's cousin or sister or somebody. There were a lot of Smiths on there. And the Eli Nixons, that's right, they were there. The men there were sort of, they didn't get called up. I think they probably weren't physically fit enough, you know, they wouldn't have been passed. Certainly the Nixons wouldn't.
Did you expect the job to end with the end of war, or were you hoping that it would go on?
Virginia and I wanted to stay on, but we were no longer sponsored by the ministry. They stopped sponsoring us. Grand Union Canal Company weren't very keen. They didn't think it was the right thing for women, and we ourselves felt we would have to compete with the boat people for cargoes. And as there were fewer and fewer cargoes being brought in by the coasters to Limehouse and Brentford, we thought perhaps it wasn't quite fair that we should, if the men came back, that we should compete with them. It was their living and their place first. And we thought that it wasn't fair, and probably quite rightly thought we probably wouldn't be able to compete with them, you know, on a realistic basis. So it seemed inevitable that we would have to leave.
Mm-hmm. Did you leave immediately after the war, or did it
not
carry
on? I think we did a couple of trips, I can't remember. Not absolutely immediately, but soon after. Soon after, yes. Yes, and then, yes, it was. Virginia and I were the last ones on the cut. We were the last of the women trainees to leave the cut. Daphne had gone some time before. I can't remember. And Kit, I don't remember. I didn't have much to do with Kit. Our paths didn't happen to cross very often. So, and then, of course, bread units, they were known as BUs, came in. And bread was our staple diet. And we thought, well, without bread, we really wouldn't have survived. It really was our staple diet, and when bread rationing came in, that seemed to be about the final blow. We didn't think we could continue. And anyway, nobody was very keen to employ us, Grand Union Canal. What's his name, who had employed us on the Oxford?
The Barlow.
Barlow. Even he was very, very dubious. He was willing, but he said he didn't think it was a very sensible idea and we should get back to our proper lives. So I went to Germany. Virginia came with me, actually. We both went to Germany under the auspice of the Ministry of Transport, believe it or not, within their waterways. Yes, it was the only way we could get there. We went as clerks. Jesus, all I wanted was a boat. And I worked in an office, and I used to get out of the window and go for walks in the tour to Burgerwald. I'm so bored. I had to do translations for them, the tripartite meetings, because none of the officers, so-called, we called them temporary gentlemen, TGs, they hadn't bothered to learn German, and I had taken a course in German at the London Polytech, and I had French as well. And so I used to do a lot of the translating, but it was so boring. And then eventually, Virginia, she went to Hamburg. And we did have some good weekends in Hamburg, sailing on the Ulster.
Where were you based?
I was based in Bielefeld, in the Westphalia. It was very dreary, except I thought it opened my eyes to the cultural side of Germany. Every town had its state theatre, Stadttheater, and its concert hall, the Oetkerhalle. And, you know, Bielefeld, I mean, it was an industrial town in total rubble. It's absolutely in ruins, rubble. But still, I can remember hearing the Berlin Symphony Orchestra and the Celibidache. Gosh, a wonderful experience, wonderful. And the theatre, I remember going to the opera. And there, again, in the interval, you didn't all rush out and get a drink. No, there'd be an artistic exhibition, art exhibition of some kind, and we'd all parade solemnly around looking at the art exhibition in the interval. I thought, how different. And that's only, I mean, every town had it. Very much more cultured. I was through the auspices of the Tockage, because we weren't supposed to fraternise with the Germans. But I got into the schools, into the boys' gymnasium and the girls' secondary school, to give lectures in English literature. Can I get up?
So did you not do any work on the canals in Germany while you were there?
Wasn't allowed to.
No, did you go, did you see anything of the canals?
Are we on? Well, I was asked because I was working in the office of the Inland Water Transport section of the Ministry of Transport in Germany, and they knew I had worked on the canals, and so Brigadier Walter said, would I like to do a trip along the Weser and the Mittelland Canal and to write a report as to the conditions of the bridges, the banks and the boats and so forth. So I was given this boat called the Minden. No, I wasn't allowed to do anything but to sit in this stateroom and write my report. I had two German men. I wasn't even allowed to cook. I had to sit there. I was so annoyed by it, I really was. But nothing I do. I wrote the report. I still have it somewhere. I think I gave it to someone.
Can you remember the state of the canals that you looked at?
Oh, yes, I can. Actually, a lot of the Hohenzollern Bridge was down. A lot of the bridges were down, and the boats were lying up idle. The contents, the cargoes, having been pilfered, of course.
They had been.
Oh, yes, they'd been pilfered and the boats were lying idle. And they were dreadful. You see, what I saw in the office at headquarters, which were in control of the waterways and the boats and the movement of cargoes, was that these men on the English section didn't speak German. They really didn't know what they were on about. And I knew that on the other side of the corridor, there was a German block of office. Their orders were being countermanded. Absolutely. I mean, I was horrified.
But the orders of the British people...
Well, they didn't know what they were doing, quite frankly. And there were all the Rhine barges, or I did see them all lined up. The Mittelland Canal, which and the Weser. I did a whole round trip. It took ages. I mean, I was quite fascinated to see it. A lot of nice countryside, of course. Ended up in where did I go? Because I Anyway, yes, I did see a lot of damaged bridges down, but the reconstruction of the canal system and the river system, the Rhine and the Weser and the canal system, were almost the first things that were restored, even while I was there. They're so important. It was regarded, river and water transport was regarded as being so important and necessary, that they were, even as I say, in the short time I was there, the bridges were a lot of the bridges were being rebuilt, and the canal was being dredged, and so on. And I thought, what a difference for our canals, which were just left desolate, and nobody realised how important they could have been to the transport. And now we have the road problem, don't we? And a lot of the constant traffic could easily, you know, goods are all being containerised, and they fit in so perfectly into these narrow boats hold. And oh yes, it was a way of life on the Weser, mind you. It's a very different system, because the boat people there came from generations. They were very proud people, and you had to have certificates to be steer a boat, to be on the Weser, on the canal. Yes. Oh, it was very strictly organized, very well organized. And they lived on board, they had whole families on board, you know, they were beautiful, the Rhine barges particularly. I went on a Rhine barge, and it was like living in a cottage, and a very different, very much more organised system than the British system. Ours was a piecemeal development here and there. It's becoming more organised now, but for the wrong reasons, for the tourists, and not for commerce. Maybe it'll come in another generation or so, when they've opened up the canal, certainly in this area, which they are doing. They're building a new canal to join Bedford to Milton Keynes, and so into the network. So all this area, which is, of course, rivers and waterways everywhere, would be opened up to transport from the continent and from Scandinavia. It's so obvious. It would take an awful lot of the traffic off the roads, mm-hmm. because we have these great lorries. We see them on the roads all the time. I often, in my mind, transport them onto a canal system. However, so that was really the end of my experience, because they started up the schools, the British Forces Educational Service in Germany, and I switched and became employed. Audrey and I started a school in Bad Salzuflen, where all the Allied missions were stationed, and we had the children, of course, the Czechs and the Yugoslavs and the French, and the only ones that we didn't have were the Russians. And it was a multinational school, which was I thoroughly enjoyed.
These would have been displaced people, would they?
No, these were the children of the Allied missions who were there, the control commissions. And they were centred in Bad Salzuflen, which was a lovely spa town. And they brought their families and the children. And we had some English children as well. So, of course, the Czechs were delightful people to work with. The French were pretty awful. They tried to treat us like governesses, until we very firmly said that we are being paid by the British government, so you will have to accept the curriculum that we use. And the French were the ones. The Belgians and the Czechs were delightful.
Where were you based then? Where were you based in your school?
Oh, in Bad Salzuflen, which is not far from Bielefeld. I was still doing my talks on English literature in Bielefeld, because I could always get transport, of course, that was laid on. I became an officer, of course, then. I'd only been an OR.
So you were officially in the mission, were you? your role? What was your... Did you have a...
The British Forces Educational Service.
So you... Was that the army?
No, it was a civilian. And it started up... Because there were so many service people stationed in the Control Commission. I suppose it was part of the Control Commission. It must have been. So it was to provide educational facilities for the British children of the services. But where I was, it happened, so happened that we had this multinational population of the Allies.
You said you were an officer.
I became an officer when I went into education.
Did you have to wear a uniform?
No, we were civilians.
Oh, I see, it was just a rank, really, yes. They gave you.
Well, yes, you had all the difference in the world. I was an other rank when I went to work in the office of the Inland Waterways. It meant you couldn't go into the, there was special, what do you call it?
Sort of restrictions and...
Yeah, you couldn't go into the...
The officer's mess.
Well, no, you couldn't go into the officer's mess, but there were also... a spa. What was the name of...
Naffy?
Naffies and other... You know... What's the word I want? The word's gone. I can't...
But you say you didn't really have the privileges.
No, you had no privileges of other rank.
But as an officer, you
did. Oh, yes.
Well, I'd like to ask you a lot more about Germany, but I know you're very tired, Margaret. And so finally, I'd like to ask you this question. Did you find it difficult to adapt to life on the land after the canals, you know, having had these what would seem very satisfying years?
Mm. It's always been a healthy antidote to intense mental engagement, mental occupation such as teaching. I got married, of course, because I wanted children. Disastrous, of course. I mean, I was 32. That's why I left Germany, to come home to get married. I won't go into that because I had three children, all delightful. Second one was a Down syndrome, but still, she's still delightful. Her birthday on Saturday. And it was, I think I always would have found it difficult, whatever, to have fitted in to an organised, efficient society. I wasn't that kind of person. And this just exaggerated what I already had really been. I'd always not lived the conventional kind of life, even when I was younger. And I wandered. I've had I don't know how many addresses, about 20, I think. I mean, the wanderlust is there, very much so. And the waterways, they have provided me with a safety net, I think, from over intense nervous energy, as I have on these awful, highly sort of is developed nervous system that can easily tip you over. I've had a couple of breakdowns and so on. And good physical activity and the boats have really saved me from perhaps worse.
So you were able to go back after the war, after Germany, to the water. Do you return?
Well, I got married, of course, and that took up a whole section of my life. The three children, that's when I took the village school.
But after that you went back, did you, to the canals?
When did I go back? Well, after the schools were all busy closing and so on, and I was given this wonderful sabbatical year at Bristol, and I was persuaded, I had a very good HMI who, he'd come to, I'd got to know him, he came over to Germany, and he said you should go into college, and I did this year, and I did philosophy of education with Gordon Redford and history and psychology and so forth. It was a wonderful year. And I said, you know, to Gordon Redford, do you think I'd be any good in... I wanted to spread the gospel of small schools, the value of small schools for young children. And he said, yes, yes, yes. I said, but I haven't got any proper qualifications. He said, never mind, try. So I applied to Liverpool. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was called for an interview. Giles had left school by this time and was working in the Merchant Navy based in Liverpool. And so I was given a pre-interview by the principal, and I thought, well, this is it. I put my cards on the table. I said, I have no qualifications, I don't live with my husband, I have a handicapped daughter. And I thought, oh, but my dear, that's marvellous. She said, I was in before I could blink.
Well, I'd like to ask you a lot more about your...
And from there, the Leeds-Liverpool Canal ran along the edge of the college. Mm. And, of course, I said, Leeds-Liverpool Canal? That's when any boat will do. I got a little rowing boat to begin with. I could strap on the top of the van. And we used to take picnics and paddle ourselves along the Rufford branch of the canal amongst the reeds and the rushes there.
And that's why you were doing your course at Liverpool?
No, I was teaching then. By then I was teaching. I was given a flat on campus because I had two children still at home, including the handicapped one. And she went to a day centre down the road, and Helen went to a local school and became music and went to Chets in Manchester eventually. And so, of course, the obvious thing was to have a boat on the canal. So I had the Carry-On, the fiberglass cruiser, eventually, four-berth cruiser, when we travelled all up and down the canals. Yes, and I was associated ever since. And then the college was transferred to Northampton because there were too many colleges, so-called. They were teacher training colleges then in Liverpool, and there was nothing much in Northamptonshire. So I was transported, I was 56, and no money, everybody, all the men, of course, had houses and were well established and so forth. And I hadn't any money because I'd never worked for money, you know, and so I hadn't a house to sell. So I thought, what can I do? And I thought, Northampton, Grand Union, boats. So I saw my boat builder in Pelsall in Birmingham. I said, look, can you find me a boat and do something about it? Because I've nowhere to live. I had no help whatsoever from either authorities. I was the eldest person on the Saar. Of course, I had no qualifications. I remember Dr. Ogilvy, he got on the bandwagon of the gifted child, rubbish stuff. And he interviewed the education department and said, the only woman and the least well qualified. I said, opportunity's a fine thing.
So did you get your canal boat at this stage?
That's when I got my canal boat, the Alphonse.
And that was called?
The Alphonse. It was an old working boat, and Malcolm Brain converted it into the most beautiful creature you ever saw, and was the most beautiful, wonderful, comfortable home that I've ever had. I lived on it until I retired, and by then the children had left. I'd got Judith into a Steiner village home and so on. But so, I lived on it and very happily. It's only that the jobs were beginning and the hire companies were starting up, and I thought it's no place for a woman on her own. So very reluctantly, I think I ended the book. It was like I hated selling it, but I couldn't see any future for me on my own. So it felt like an act of treason. And then I went off to Ireland and met up with Daphne again.
You were saying that, you know, you consider yourself an unconventional sort of woman. Do you think in the war, you know, with the scheme of voluntary bargee women, most who stayed would have been more unconventional?
Oh, I'm sure so. I think so. I mean, they had a streak of it there, but of course you soon get caught back into, you know, a routine, an acceptable lifestyle. I mean, Virginia married, and She married Peter Strauss, German Jew, very fond. He's dead now. But, I mean, you know, she's lived a conventional sort of life. She was more conventional, I suppose. It depends on circumstances, what happens, you know. I've never been able to establish, except in the village. I was there 9 years, which was quite a stretch for me.